here we are. Las Vegas International Press Club. This is Frank Spady. I've got a little sore throat. Just got back from St. Louis. All the humidity, I brought it with me in my body. Just, I'm glad to be back. And you're expecting Leonard Wright, but we got the latest and greatest from the Financial Friday. My man Jason thought he would stick around. I appreciate it, Jason.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, Leonard Wright is off to Houston. He'll be in Dallas as well over the weekend. So he's out and about on the plane right now, and so I'm filling out. I'm Jason A. Thomas, co-host of Financial Fridays as well. Happy to be here, Frank. It's pretty exciting. What is today, Frank? What is the anniversary of today?
Hey, this is D-Day. This is a very special day. In fact, I was one of our guests that's going to be coming on here in about 5-6 minutes. I'm very honored to have. He's a very good friend of mine, and also he's a veteran, even though he is a Marine. I don't want to bring it up, but he was just over at the Reagan Library, and I was talking to him earlier because this day, 1984, I think, he'd give a very special speech on D-Day, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, but this is a big day, and so Jason, yeah, I want you to take over a little bit of the mic because my throat's about dying. But okay. give me a little bit about your background. I didn't know you graduated. I think from Boise State.
Yeah, that's right. I'm actually a Bronco. I'm a Boise State Bronco. Didn't have as good a football team when I graduated. 1988.
Did you play? Was you on the team?
But you know, I didn't play in college. I played quite a bit of baseball and football and all that in high school. But retired and didn't make it into the college ranks, but that's okay. Proud to be a Bronco. Did really well for their for them seasons, and that was always fun. But
were you stationed in Guam?
I was in Guam. Now everybody says, "Was I with the military?" And you know, that actually wasn't the case. I was with an accounting company as well, but I hanged out with a lot of military guys and people and wonderful people in the service. We always partied and had a lot of good times in Guam.
Well, see, the only thing about me that I always want to bring up about Guam was that when you got there, I mean, was it did with the weight? I mean, I was concerned that the island might want to tip over. Remember that lady in Congress when they asked her that question?
They said that. Oh, is that right?
Do you remember that, John, when they asked that question? Do you remember that?
I don't. Thank God don't. But I was just going to ask Jason if he hung out with a lot of very solid Marine Corps types over there.
You know, all types. You know, that was a fun place to be. I don't know who showed up for the party. I didn't exactly know what branch they were with. They were letting their hair down. That was the experience I had. So I'm not sure what part of the service they were from. They're all great people and all had a good time. And they were away from home and they needed to have a good time. So I always opened up my place and welcomed them with open arms.
I know when I stopped in Guam, I was on my way back from Vietnam in 1966. And I had left Pleiku. We got into a horrific drunken brawl. I mean, in Pleiku, and when I got to Guam, it was I think the brawl continued on, and they handcuffed me in it was a C-141 jet to the seat.
Oh my
god!
And
so I know, and so they just it continued on, and it was a. There were some wild bars in Guam. It was a wild city. But anyway, since you just heard another voice there, I wanted to introduce our next guest, John Cole. You got his bio there in front of you. I said, do you have it right there in front of you?
I certainly do.
Why don't you? So my voice is going away. Do you mind taking
Absolutely.
The time before you do it? I want to let you know John Cole is a very good friend of mine. Him and I met about. Oh, God, it was been 5-6 years ago, John.
Exactly.
And him and I got to know each other, and he's, we met at a CEO, CFO function or something like that, and so he has been in town forever. He's a good veteran, like I said, even though he's a Marine, and he's serves the country well and represented it well. And so got two great kids, right? Two sons. One graduated from U of A, right?
U of A in December with a degree in computer science, Phi Beta Kappa.
Right, right.
The intelligence must have come from his mother's side of the family.
I agree with that. And so you want to take the rest of it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about John's background here. And currently he's the CEO of IntelliChoice Energy LLC. He's a chief executive officer, and he brings over 30 years of experience in this role and a primary in the area of operations, finance, and strategy development. Been doing all kinds of things in various industries over the years, in financial services, hospitality, gaming, being the CEO, COO, CFO, rare combination of a Fortune 100 as well as small independently owned company leadership experiences. So, I mean, runs the gamut, runs the spectrum, and worked all over the place, U.S., Europe, Asia, helping businesses transform their operations to achieve their strategic and competitive advantages. And John, throughout his career, has served on so many different boards, nonprofits, and had a lot of distinctive awards. John, thanks for the opportunity to interview you. We're very excited about this. So welcome for you to be here.
And right now, John, like I said, he is the CEO of IntelliChoice Energy. And so let's start off by asking the very important question. What does IntelliChoice Energy do, John?
Well, we have a very unique role in the energy services industry, Frank. First off, Jason, thank you for the welcome. I really appreciate
that. Welcome.
It's terrific to be here. IntelliChoice Energy is the only company in the nation that will sell HVAC systems that are natural gas-based. And what do I mean by that?
In the nation.
In the nation.
Oh, okay.
We're the only ones. What do I mean by that? If you look at an HVAC system, basically they're run off large amperage motors. So that's why when you use so much of your air conditioning in the summer, your electric bills go through the roof. NV Energy, you pay their peak rates, and now Warren Buffett is just going to smile all the way to the bank.
Now, yeah, wait a minute. Now, Warren Buffett, he bought NV Energy for a loss, right? I mean,
well, he wants to give you a break, Frank.
Oh,
that's why
he
bought it.
Okay,
yeah, he's a very, very good man. Anyhow, so what we have done, and this is not new technology. This technology has been around since about 1986. But what a lot of people in the United States don't know is there's about 700,000 of these units around the world, and only about 300 of them are here in the United States. And basically what it does is it removes that large amperage electric motor that runs an HVAC. And by the way, this is when I say an HVAC system, this is heating and air conditioning. So if you think about your furnace as well as your air conditioning, they're both run off electric motors, large amperage electric motors. We've taken that, our technology takes out that electric high amp motor and replaces it literally with a natural gas based engine. Now, our equipment under the banner of NextAir is actually manufactured by a company out of Japan called Aisin, AISIN, a terrific company. And they're a subsidiary of Toyota Motor Corporation. So the engines in our units are literally Toyota engines that were engineered from the ground up to run off natural gas. These are not gasoline-converted engines to run off natural gas. They were engineered from the ground up to run off natural gas. And that's what runs the compressors within the units to provide you either heating or air conditioning.
Wow.
So all of a sudden, if you look at your gas bill and the rate you pay for natural gas versus your electric bill and what you pay for a kilowatt hour.
Oh, huge difference.
Right. Suddenly, we are saving people. We save people over 80% during the summer of their electrical usage on their HVAC system. You never hit a Nevada Energy peak rate in the summer by utilizing our system.
And what you were saying, there are 700,000 of these machines in the world. I think that's what you were saying. And 300 of those are in the United States. Is that 300,000 or just 300?
No, that's 300.
And 300 and out of 700,000.
And we have placed them all.
Oh, my gosh.
So the world knows something that we're just learning, and we're the conduit to help them learn that.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
Well, this is an incredible thing. I look into
energy. And they're based right here in Las Vegas.
Right. We're headquartered here, yes.
And I look into energy. I have a little bit of experience actually being an MC of an energy-based company. That's an incredible idea, and I'm just wondering, is this a residential product?
It could be used anywhere. You're going to use air conditioning or heating. We do have a minimum square footage of about 3,000 square feet. So if you have a home that's above 3,000 square feet, we have a unit that'll work for you. We have an 8-ton unit and a 15-ton unit. So anything above 3,000 square feet, we make sense for. And for larger, for example, commercial, we have a large office building in Los Angeles where we have 25 of our units that totally heat and cool that office building in Los Angeles. So we can bridge our units together to meet whatever square footage requirements are out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a pretty novel idea, but probably almost an essential idea as energy starts to go up, especially electric energy. A lot of people don't know this, but there's mandates for coal-fired plants to go away, and that's going to increase energy. Just because it's solar and things like that doesn't mean it's going to reduce the cost of energy. It's actually going to be higher. So this sounds like a very good alternative to this. Is there any restriction on going green with this, or is this a green product?
This is a green product. In fact, if you build from the ground up, if you build a new product or project, and you incorporate our technology into it, you can get over 30 lead points, depending on how you utilize our equipment, in going for LEED certification for your building or your complex. So, yes, absolutely a green product. It's interesting right now because of the recent EPA standards coming out saying we have to reduce, I think, by 30% emissions by 2030.
They're high.
What that tells people is the coal fire plants are going to have to go away. And so why are your electric rates going to go up? Well, because they've got to pay to transform those coal fire plants into other energy in which to generate your electricity. What a lot of people also don't know that we take advantage of with our technology is that in the transmission, electric transmission is very, very inefficient. Okay? Approximately 92% of natural gas gets to the end point.
Oh, I gotcha.
Right.
So it's very, very efficient.
Very efficient in transmission. And whereas with electricity, it's far less efficient than that. Yeah. But you pay for it anyway because you have to.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not much leakage when you're saying 92%. That's pretty decent transmission of energy. And so how did you get started with this company? How long have you been with them?
I've been with them a little over a year. We are a subsidiary, just a full disclosure. We are a subsidiary of Southwest Gas.
Okay.
But the reason I don't mind saying that is it shows the foresight of Southwest Gas trying to bring about products that will not only utilize what is now one of America's greatest production efforts, which is we are now the largest producer of natural gas in the world. The United States is. So it's an abundant energy. Is it an endless energy? The answer is no. It is not renewable. But with the reserves that have been found and those that are expected to be found, for example, they believe there's a large cache under the state of California. Well over 100 years worth of natural gas is available today. So for those people who are on the green side of the aisle who talk about, well, it's not a renewable energy, we understand that. But what we also understand is we can't go from the old technology and the old energy sources we've always used immediately to a renewable source because we haven't found that renewable is commercially viable yet by the many examples, you know, Trisinda with the, and things like that.
Oh, yeah. Solidine.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So what we're saying is, look, we may not be perfect and we may not fit totally into the green side of the aisle, but we are very efficient. We are very pollution constricted, if you will, through the exhaust of our engines. So although we may not totally fit your bill if you're on the green side of the aisle, we are a very, very good product for transitioning until renewable energy is commercially viable.
But, you know, the amazing thing about energy, John, because I'm with the Turnaround Management Association. I'm the president of Nevada. I also happen to be the global trustee of the organization internationally, and we do have conferences on energy specific problems. What's amazing is coal is really going to be an energy source for America. It's already a huge energy source, and it's going to maintain that way through the next 30 or 40 years. If it wasn't for coal, we would have a lot of dark cities on the East Coast. Isn't that true?
Well, that's true, but you also have especially on the East Coast, you have oil-based furnaces and things like that as well. But again, America's dependency on oil, the nice part for America and oil, and you'll have people arguing this all day long, is right now the second, I believe, the second or third largest supplier of oil to the United States is Canada.
Right.
Now, we've had the whole discussion about the Keystone Pipeline, which I find totally interesting, because the Obama administration is fighting the idea of approving that pipeline, even though what a lot of people don't realize is this administration already approved part of that pipeline prior to the current plan, okay? And what the current plan does is it allows a pipeline to be built directly from Alberta to a major town and oil distribution point in the state of Nebraska. And then there's a second portion of it that takes it from a major distribution point in Oklahoma down to Houston and a port and the ports off the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know, all we're saying is we're trying to improve the transportation of it. The more they take out of the ground there, not only is it the more oil is created, but the more natural gas is also created. Now, imagine this for a second. Our first and second sources are Saudi Arabia and Venezuela. Now, wouldn't you rather have more of a vital, critical supply of energy coming from a neighbor that is friendly to you versus constantly having to rely on who knows what?
How do you feel about that one, Frank?
I couldn't agree more. I mean,
did I light the fuse, Jason?
Yeah. Well, you know, Frank's. What do you do, Frank, with Canada, Nevada?
I mean, that's what we're all about. Yeah. Canada, Nevada Business Council. I mean, I am 100% behind that. And I to this day, the environmentalist. I mean, it's environmentally free. Behind that, I mean, all the reports come back environmentally friendly.
It's from the research I've done. It increases a bit of environmental pollution by this, and they're actually anticipating. At this point in time, they're projecting 170 billion gallons of oil coming out of the ground in Alberta, Canada, which is why they want this pipeline. And what a lot of people also don't understand is North Dakota right now is the second largest producer of oil in the United States.
Very much so.
And back of Texas. But this pipeline is also going to help the folks in North Dakota get the oil to other parts of the United States, too.
Without question.
So there's a benefit to a lot of people here. But my point becomes there's a lot of reasons why we should do it, part of that being natural gas, because for those of you who don't know, when you mine petroleum, you also get a natural gas byproduct of it. And that's why the United States, in part right now, is the largest producer of natural gas in the world and will be for some time. And in fact, the projection is by 2016, we're going to be an exporting nation of natural gas, no longer an importing nation.
So it's kind of logical to actually just do the pipeline, just to start from North Dakota, because it's within our borders, and then just add it later when it's appropriate, maybe to Alberta. But it's non-controversial in the sense that it's all within America.
Well,
start with, isn't it?
No.
And okay. Well,
forgive me for.
Well, absolutely. Tell me, school me because I'm just learning.
Here's why. The other part of the pipeline is that this pipeline will be built and paid for by a Canadian company.
Mm.
So if you were to do what you were talking about, you're going to have to find a consortium of U.S. companies or a large U.S.
company. So this thing is pre-financed.
It's all pre-financed. They're ready to go. They're waiting for...
Well, you got, TransCanada that's involved in that?
That's right. Who owns it.
Yeah, that's right.
And Keystone is a subsidiary of TransCanada, and that's where the name comes from.
I gotcha.
Right. Right.
So they're ready to go.
Exactly.
Now, what they're saying is, look, we're not just talking about oil. Our oil here, you can transport your oil as well.
So we're talking a free pipeline for our own products.
Free pipeline, U.S. jobs, both in construction and then ultimately supplemental jobs for not only maintenance, but jobs created because we're going to have to construct ports and things like that.
And they're also finding new wells in Canada. Absolutely true. There is more reserves they have not tapped in Canada.
Right. Well, the Ring of Fire that sits up in Ontario, that's a huge find. I mean, that in itself is something that's going to blow the top off of it. I mean, that huge finds there, what they have. And, another thing I wanted to bring up with what you're talking about, natural gas, what about in Ukraine?
Well, this is what's so different right now. The United States has a phenomenal opportunity, but again, the foreign policy of this administration being what it is.
What is it? excuse me.
I'm trying to be kind, Frank, okay, but thank you for the lead-in.
Okay.
Yes, right now, the Ukraine gets all of its natural gas from Russia.
Right.
Russia has threatened to cut their natural gas off.
Right.
One of the alternatives that has been talked about is that the United States could pick up the slack and provide the Ukraine with the natural gas needs that they have as one way of kind of limiting Russia's influence and impact in the Ukraine. So, yes, it's also a foreign policy tool, and the more we create, the more leverage we may have.
And they just signed, didn't China just sign a $500 billion deal with
Russia?
With Russia,
yes.
Correct?
Absolutely.
Huge deal.
But we've seen over historical times that China and Russia aren't always necessarily long-term friends.
Yeah, but
I'm not as worried about that.
Right. So I fully understand. So, why don't we take a little break? And I want to get back to John. I want to talk to you a little bit about your trip over there. I'm very excited about that. Yeah, you and I are both friends of him. And so we'll be right back. I want you to listen to this song for the break, because I know you like classic cars too.
Yes, you get into my car.
This is Leonard Wright, Money Doctor for the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, reminding you that asset diversification is important. We continue our series that highlights that the next crisis, just as it always has been, is just around the corner, and our in-depth review of the Great Depression. For help in determining your risk tolerance and asset diversification strategy, you can find a personal financial specialist at www.findapfs.com. According to many accounts, there were three key causes of the Great Depression identified. Government was the root cause, overproduction and underconsumption was the root cause, and debt deflation was the main cause of the depression. Government was the root cause. Austrian economists' opinion is that the expansion of the monetary supply in the 1920s created an inevitable path toward a depression as a result of the free and easy credit and unsustainable credit boom of the era. The economists believe that the government intervention prior to the Depression created an environment where the Depression was inevitable, and the attempts by the government to delay the natural cycle by spending significant sums delayed the recovery and actually extended the Depression. Hayek and Murray Rothbard argued that the American population lost faith in the banking system and hoarded cash. As a result, despite significant purchases of treasuries by the Federal Reserve, it could not reinflate the economy. Overproduction and underconsumption was assumed to be the root cause. As a result of the cheap money from the 1920s, factories had overbuilt and had more plant space than could be used and generate a profit. Factories generated more product than could be used. This was a global issue with too many factories around the world. No new factories were needed as the economy had been overbuilt. As a result, new state and federal construction projects were started. The third root cause, according to Irving Fisher's The Debt Deflation Theory of Great Depressions, debt deflation was the main cause of the Great Depression. It is the persistence of high levels of debt that is a catalyst for a Great Depression. He considered overconfidence, overspeculation, and overproduction to be minor issues as contrasted with their combination with over-indebtedness and deflation. In our next Money Bites segment, we will examine Fisher's 9 links of a deflationary depression. This is Leonard Wright, Money Doctor for the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and you've been listening to Money Bites. Find us at 360financialliteracy.org.
If you're not satisfied with the results your website is getting, do your business a huge favor and listen to this short message. Okay, here's the real deal. 20 years ago, you could throw just about anything up on the net and people would flock to it. Today, that's simply no longer possible. The reason is that there are literally billions of websites online. That's a lot of competition. Today, a website needs so much more than just a nice design. It needs to be truly creative, incredibly dynamic, and have flawless function. It needs powerful SEO that will put it at the top of the search engines, like Google and Bing. And well-crafted advertising campaigns that drive plenty of traffic to your virtual door. And it also needs one last thing: engaging, valuable, or at least entertaining content written by creative experts. Because let's face it, even if you do everything to get people to visit your site, if you don't give them content that keeps them there, you're still sunk. And that content is what you'll find at RankingEdge.com. Contact us today and let us show you how we can turn your website into the most powerful business tool you own. A website that stands out, brings in visitors, turns them into customers, and sells your product or service. RankingEdge.com. Websites that work. 702-463-0977. 702-463-0977.
What keeps you up at night? If you're like most people, it's those never-ending questions about your financial future, like, if I lose my job, will I have enough money in the bank? How can I save for both my kids' college and retirement? How do I protect what I've spent a lifetime building? You're looking for someone you can trust, who you can speak to throughout the year and depend upon through life's uncertainties. That person is a CPA PFS, a certified public accountant who is also a personal financial specialist, the exclusive financial planning credential for CPAs. Their unparalleled and extensive tax expertise, combined with a comprehensive knowledge of financial planning, will help you connect all aspects of your financial life. And since these all impact your taxes, no one can give better advice than a CPA, the profession with over 100 years of personal finance experience. Whether it's retiring, buying that first home, putting your kids through college, or providing for loved ones, a CPA PFS can help you not only meet your financial goals, but help you stay on the path to realize your personal dreams. So speak to one of our CPA PFS financial professionals today and sleep better tonight.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute, we'll always recognize when we see old glory flying. There's a lot of men.
Yeah. Okay, so I can hope y'all, you vets out there, can relate to that. Hey, welcome back. So, John, I thought before we get into our next guest, I wanted to tell us a little bit, since this is a special day, this is D-Day for all our veterans and for all our folks out there in the service. Hey, I wanted to, since you was very honored to go over, and, two weekends ago, you was at Ronald Reagan.
It might have been three, but was not it long ago.
And I think it was 1984 that Ronald Reagan was at D-Day, and he gave that special speech, which I thought was very special. And you want to comment on that a little bit?
I would love to. I'll comment on two things, if you don't mind. One is the library, and the other is the speech.
Okay.
I pride myself on being a novice historian, but I love everything related to the United States history. But especially focus on politics and wars and how they intertwine. But anyhow, the library is absolutely beautiful. If you don't know exactly where it's at, you're going to miss it, because the entrance to it is kind of in a mixed neighborhood type of area. And when I say mixed, I mean very beautiful area, absolutely gorgeous area, but not...
Now, this is where at in California?
It's about 50... 50 or so miles from Santa Barbara.
Okay.
So, but it's just a beautiful part of Southern California. And you go up this winding road, which is just gorgeous. You get up to the top, and the entrance is nice, but not, breathtaking, if you will. The breathtaking part happens once you get inside and you see the various things. For example, if you go back where he's interned, And if you're facing where his area is, and do a 180 and look back there, it oversees this valley that is absolutely majestic. And for me, it reminded me immediately of his comments about America being the shining city on the hill, because this library is up on a hill overseeing a valley that is absolutely exquisite, just gorgeous. It's extremely well done. It's well laid out. But another big part that I just love is they have this huge area that could double as a hangar. And they have the original Air Force One.
Oh, wow.
The 707 really? That really? John Kennedy flew in. He was actually the first president to use an official Air Force One. And a lot of people don't remember, but the 747 was transitioned through George H.W. Bush's term. So an agreement was made with the Reagan Library, and they got one of the Air Force Ones.
And now it's the party 747 Air Force One, I guess, right?
The vacation.
Or the vacation. Yeah, I get them confused now.
Okay. But they also have a Marine one there, which is the helicopter that takes the president from the White House to Andrews Air Force Base.
Right, right.
And apparently that Air Force or Marine one at the Reagan Library was formerly in the Lyndon Johnson Library. Mm. And they somehow made an arrangement to get that there. But it's beautiful. You can walk through that Air Force One, which really amazed me because of how relatively small and tight it was. And in the Air Force One, the president's at the front of the plane and, you know, everybody else is towards the back. But it was amazing. And it reminds you, as you walk through and see the various exhibits, it reminds you continuously how much that man loved, absolutely loved, sincerely loved the United States and what it stood for, and wanted everybody in the world to know that, recognize it, and hold that dear to their heart almost as much as he did. I actually hold him, out of all the presidents we had in the 20th century, some being far more impactful than others, I list him and Harry Truman as the two greatest presidents of the 20th century for the primary reason that they made extremely tough decisions without, in most cases, giving a damn about what the polls said, but doing it because they felt it was right. Truman had a number of those, with from dropping the bomb to the Berlin airlift to going into Korea, integrating the services, recognizing Israel. Reagan did the same thing with how his approach to the Soviet Union, the air traffic controllers and firing them. I mean, that takes not only leadership but extreme courage. As a politician and as a president, and both those gentlemen had just that.
Yeah. Well, you know, this morning before I come on here, because I knew it was D-Day, I reread his speech. And I don't know if any of you have reread it or read it. Very, very touching speech from his me being an airborne ranger. And him quoting the Rangers coming up that wall was very special.
It's amazing. It was about a 13-minute speech, listed by many historians as probably one of the, if not the best speech of his presidency, made on June 6, 1984. The men that that were there the original day in 1944, those that were remained were there. And it was amazing that how his words and his description of what they went through, I mean, brought these very brave, very tough men, some of them to tears. And it was a very somber moment, but it was wonderfully delivered.
Very. So anyway, I know I'm cutting into our next guest this time, but I thought it is a very special day, and I know our next guest is a very good friend of mine, and also his son is in the service, and he's the past executive director of the USO and did a great job by bringing the USO to Nevada and did an extremely excellent job. Doug Bradford, we're very honored to have you here, and I want him to talk a little bit about what he's doing for the Veterans Village. And if you don't mind, Doug, if you could speak on it. And by the way, welcome, and thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you, Frank. I appreciate it very much. Having been in the service myself and seeing what today means, like you, it's a very somber day for all of us and one that we should be very, very proud of. Like you, I went back and read President Reagan's speech today, and it just goes to show you what he thought about this country, and we should all be proud that we are Americans and had a leader such as Ronald Reagan. So anyway, what we're doing with Veterans Village, it's a brand new facility, well, relatively new, about 2.5 years old. And the owners of the property bought a dilapidated motel on Las Vegas Boulevard in Charleston, and it's a 120-room motel. They were going to put a skyrise there during the recession, but it hit hard, and so they decided that the veterans needed some help. So they refurbished the entire hotel. So 120 rooms were gutted and outside repainted, a lot of new features brought into the facility. And in the past 2.5 years they've been open, they've served over 21,000 veterans who have come to our town.
Oh, wow, that's great.
And what's really amazing about it is a veteran can stay there for $20 a night. So they have a place to stay, they have a shower, nice place to sleep, they can watch TV. Veterans Village, we're calling it the one-stop vet shop, because it's a resource for the community. There's nothing like it in the entire country. The executive director of Veterans Village, Arnold Stock, has got such a great idea. He's going back next week to talk to the congressional delegation about modeling this kind of facility around the country, taking old hotels that have been run down and getting federal funding to turn them into a veterans facility near veteran clinics and hospitals, so that there's an opportunity for folks to stay relatively expensively, get things done that they need to get done. So it's a fascinating and wonderful place, and I'm very happy to be a part of it.
That's fantastic. And how long is this? From my understanding, we was going to have Arnold Stock on the show, correct? And he couldn't make it, and so you're here. How long has he been involved with this?
Well, Arnold has been part of the Las Vegas community for some 20-plus years. He worked at the city of Las Vegas and worked in the redevelopment agency, and he did a lot of background on Arnold, a lot of background work on an architecture as well. Just a terrific guy, but his passion is taking facilities and helping people out. He's a social engagement person. He loves to help people out. So when his business partners decided to pull this Veterans Village together, he came up with the idea, helped him find the place, got him through all the political processes that are needed to be undertaken, and has done a marvelous job. What I find fascinating about this is a 24/7, 365-day facility. It is open all the time for our vets. So if they need access to any medical or mental health services, any kind of food or nutrition services, clothing, job training, all of that's going to be at the Veterans Village. They even will take the vets out to the VA clinics and hospitals if they have appointments. So it's a great, great organization, but like any nonprofit, there is a need for some public assistance, community assistance. And he doesn't take federal dollars, and there's a reason behind that. And it's simply because it takes so long to get through the red tape that by the time an individual needs some help, he would not be able to get the help he needs. So, for example, Arnold works on the honesty theory. If you come into this village on the end of the month, 2 days before you get your paycheck, and say, I'm going to get it and it's going to be here, Arnold say, well, put you up, just give us money when you come back or when your money comes in. So that kind of honesty and that help for the veterans, it's appreciated like you would not believe. Now, they're individual rooms. They don't offer any meals, so it's not a shelter like other homeless facilities are. This is a place that's an independent living facility. There are kitchenettes that the vets can go into and cook their own meals, they're welcome to stay there as long as they want. As a matter of fact, they have a 70-year-old Marine veteran who has been there.
I can see Marines. Yeah, but I can see a Marine there.
John was excited about that. but he's been there for a year. And the reason why he's been there is because he doesn't have anything else except the camaraderie of being around other veterans. And so we're looking at trying to do some expansion work. They've already been asked by the city of Henderson and Pahrump to build a similar facility down there in those two communities. That's how strong of a need there is for this Veterans Village.
Yeah, this is Jason Doug. And so, I mean, it's just amazing. Look at the amenities that are on this facility. Wi-Fi, internet service, weekly maid cleaning. You got a laundromat, as well as access to full kitchen and common room. That is just an incredible benefit for people to have. I just can't tell you how wonderful that is, and you know, admire that.
And the Home Depot helps you on this. Is that correct?
Home Depot was very good about helping put together a huge group of volunteers, and they gave about $600,000 to refurbish the outside of the building. But the insides always had to be redone
right,
as well.
Right.
And so right now, every time a tenant moves out, they have to go in and they thoroughly clean the room. And they're getting rid of all the carpet because the carpet attracts dirt. It's very difficult to clean. They have that once a week maid service, but it really isn't enough. So they're retiling every single room in there. That obviously takes some money. They throw the sheets away every week after a tenant, because there are certain things that occur within the human body functions, and so they just need to make sure that we can get a whole bunch of those sheets back in. So we're looking for donations of queen beds, and we're also looking at expanding it to add two people per room versus one person per room as it is now. That gives us more capacity to bring in our vets and help and serve more vets. It's a incredible place. But like I say, it's a nonprofit, and there are certain needs they have. They need a vehicle to transport folks back and forth. Right now, the volunteers do it, and my experience at the USO says that's a huge liability when you have a volunteer driving somebody. So they need to have those kinds of things. They have a 60-year-old air conditioning chiller. Actually, they have two of them.
How can people get involved? Is there a number or a website, or what can we do here?
Actually, glad you asked that one, because there's two ways to get involved. They can look at the website. It's www.vvlv.org, as veteransvillage.org, or phone number of 702-624-5792, and you'll get Arnold direct. He will talk to whomever wants to.
And what is that phone number again?
It's 702-624-5792.
And the website?
www.victorlasvegas.org.
And also, for everybody out there, you can come to our website, and we'll have a link to that. And, Doug, we really appreciate you coming on board. And also, stay tuned, because Shad is... he has not called in. Oh, let me just a second. Well, we'll come on mom back. If not here, we'll get John back online, or we'll talk further on this. So we'll be right back.
I brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
If you're not satisfied with the results your website is getting, do your business a huge favor and listen to this short message. Okay, here's the real deal. 20 years ago, you could throw just about anything up on the net and people would flock to it. Today, that's simply no longer possible. The reason is that there are literally billions of websites online. That's a lot of competition. Today, a website needs so much more than just a nice design. It needs to be truly creative, incredibly dynamic, and have flawless function. It needs powerful SEO that will put it at the top of the search engines, like Google and Bing. And well-crafted advertising campaigns that drive plenty of traffic to your virtual door. And it also needs one last thing: engaging, valuable, or at least entertaining content written by creative experts. Because let's face it, even if you do everything to get people to visit your site, if you don't give them content that keeps them there, you're still sunk. And that content is what you'll find at RankingEdge.com. Contact us today and let us show you how we can turn your website into the most powerful business tool you own. A website that stands out, brings in visitors, turns them into customers, and sells your product or service. RankingEdge.com. Websites that work. 702-463-0977. 702-463-0977.
What keeps you up at night? If you're like most people, it's those never-ending questions about your financial future, like, if I lose my job, will I have enough money in the bank? How can I save for both my kids' college and retirement? How do I protect what I've spent a lifetime building? You're looking for someone you can trust, who you can speak to throughout the year and depend upon through life's uncertainties. That person is a CPA PFS, a certified public accountant who is also a personal financial specialist, the exclusive financial planning credential for CPAs. Their unparalleled and extensive tax expertise, combined with a comprehensive knowledge of financial planning, will help you connect all aspects of your financial life. And since these all impact your taxes, no one can give better advice than a CPA, the profession with over 100 years of personal finance experience. Whether it's retiring, buying that first home, putting your kids through college, or providing for loved ones, a CPA PFS can help you not only meet your financial goals, but help you stay on the path to realize your personal dreams. So speak to one of our CPA PFS financial professionals today and sleep better tonight.
Las Vegas International Press Club, the premier press club in the world. Las Vegas, Nevada is known as the Mecca for conventions, trade shows, and entertainment. Business leaders from around the world visit Las Vegas several times a year. And what do these worldwide leaders need? A place to privately conduct interviews with the press. A secure and intimate venue to dine and relax. A place to privately meet with other senior-level executives. The Las Vegas International Press Club provides all that and more. The Las Vegas International Press Club is a refined venue for intimate interviews, more privacy, more leaders, more opportunities. Find out more at lvpressclub.com. That's lvpressclub.com. Privacy, prestige, productivity. The Las Vegas International Press Club, the premier press club in the world. Learn more at lvpressclub.com.
Hey, welcome back. Hope everybody's still out there. Want to get back. Hope everybody's enjoying the talking about the mission here that we're talking to Doug on about the Veterans Lodge that he's working with. I'm just finding out about it. The Veterans Village. I think that's really neat what you're doing. And how many will it accommodate, you say?
Yeah, well, we serve 700 veterans a month.
A month?
A month. And there's 120 rooms right now, and we're considering putting two beds per room so that we can double the capacity of the facility itself, thereby serving more veterans than we currently do. And like I said, the facility is open 24/7, 365. So that lobby is always full of folks looking for assistance.
Wow!
And because we're able to provide transportation, we can take folks over to drug and alcohol abuse treatment facilities. We have a whole network of veteran services activities at Veterans Village that provide for anything that a veterans need. Because our goal is just to enable people to gain economic and self-sufficiency and get their lives back on track again. And, you know, at the end of the year, when we have more, or the drawdown in Afghanistan, we're going to have more veterans
on
the streets.
You are, aren't you?
We are going to have more veterans on the streets. And they're not going to be those top-notch, number one, first-class soldiers. They're going to be individuals who have some issues, whether they be medical or psychological. It doesn't make any difference because there's going to be a drawdown and the military is only keeping the cream of the crop. So we need to be prepared to assist those folks that come and need some assistance. And, of course, everybody loves to come to Vegas. So we need to help them as much as possible.
And so like I said, you facilitate that, but you do not facilitate getting them through the veterans the maze, right?
Yeah,
you have no accommodations there at all, correct?
We don't. I mean, they can stay there as long as they need to. For instance, if an individual has an appointment and then they have a follow-up appointment a week later, we can take care of them for that particular week or that period of time. We're not set up to do the mental health facilities or medical facilities there on site yet, although we're working on a program with Touro University where we might have a medical clinic on site. And if we can do that, then there are folks that come in, we'll get there just some minor, you know, urgent care kinds of activities. But we are more focused on making sure that they get settled, get into a room. We start helping them get through the process of working with the Veterans Administration and any other veteran services that are in the valley that they require. So it's a good opportunity for folks to relax a little bit, not right. have to worry about where they're going to stay or the cost, because, you know, $20 a night is relatively inexpensive, but it costs the village $50 a night to take care of them because of the overhead, the air conditioning, electrical, water, sure. all of that stuff. So we're looking for donations to help pay for those kinds of utilities.
And so part of the process is, you personally, are you out there, just being very bluntly, you're out there hustling to get money for mm-hmm. Getting to take care of that overhead, correct?
Exactly. That's what my role is to go within the community and look at foundations and hotels and other organizations that have some dollars, that charitable dollars that we can put out, and also get products.
Okay.
So we'll look at doing what we can to make sure that we can take care of our veterans in this community.
Okay. Hey, I think I got Shad. Shad, are you there? Hey, Shad, are you on the line?
Yeah.
Or what are you driving? Sounds like you're tapping in on driving on the line or something.
Yeah. Is this better?
Nah, it's not good at all. You're gone.
Yeah, phones went down, so I had to go outside the building to get on the cell phone. We had a building shut down.
Okay, well, this is not good at all. So.
Oh, damn.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah. Well, I can hear you well.
Okay. So anyway, I'm going back to Doug. So Doug, so your most important thing is that you're out there talking to different organizations and on being able to contribute just to offset that 70% of the expenses then.
Right. Yeah, we're a partner in the community with other veteran services organizations that are out there. We have to be, because
right,
there's
right.
just such a huge need to take care of our current veterans and those from our previous, like Vietnam and World War II. We have some World War II folks who will come by and stay with us for a while.
Doug, I've got a quick question. I take it you also take donations in kind?
Absolutely.
And are you at all tapping into, around the valley we have these the Savers stores mm-hmm. that are set up to help multiple charities, Opportunity Village and the like. Has your organization thought about tapping into them to see if they can help as well?
That is a great idea, John. I just wrote that down because I'll go after them next week to see what we can do. Because, you know, there are a lot of community organizations out there that have the little things that are about ready to expire that we can use, because they get eaten up, taken up. They get used quite frequently. So whatever we can do to reach for those kinds of goods, we do. Soap, shampoos, all of that, because we're like a mini hotel.
Yeah.
We're like a hotel.
I might also suggest, only because, and Frank, don't cringe at this, because I'm a Marine. The Marine Corps League here in town is also very active in a lot of charities and things. So if you haven't tapped into them, I would suggest
I'll work
that
with them
as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's my role, is to work the veteran services organizations
right.
too.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's good. Well, that is very interesting. I'm going to, Arnold gets back in town, let's make sure that we get together and, you and I will talk offline
Absolutely.
About that to make that happen. But I think that's a very good idea to have that downtown. And I didn't even think of it, like you say, when the vets do come back, that's going to be a huge impact. And I just hate the thought of it. Mm-hmm. I heard somebody say the other day that one out of every six person homeless is a veteran.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's just terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the wrong way to treat the people who put their lives on the line to protect this country and everything we have.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I wanted to say, I was talking about D-Day, and I think that Ronald Reagan had brought it up, is that, they did not, when they come on D-Day, they didn't stop on D-Day. They kept on going forward. So let's don't stop on veterans, okay? Let's just, and I think that with you, Doug, let's make sure people don't stop. Let's get out there and help people like Doug. All you people out there, let's keep going forward to help somebody like Doug's organization. Thank you very much. And thank you, John, for coming in.
Thanks, John. Anytime.
Thank you, Jason.
It was fun.
Bye-bye.